Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. I'm calling all goddesses, okay? And all of you men who want to be goddesses too, we're calling you too. Danielle Dolsky is back with us, and we're going to talk about her latest book, and it's The Holy Wild, A Heathen Bible for the Untamed Woman. And this is definitely a show for everybody to listen to, but especially you ladies out there. Let's get your goddess on, okay? Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back, but the real question, really is, are you truly ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I'm the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. Excuse me. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, the Men and Money book, and Masterful Choice is the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the absolute fullest. My clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, MoniqueChapman.com. I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. You can also sign up for my opt-in newsletter, Intuitive Living, and again, that's from my website, MoniqueChapman.com. My guest today, Danielle Dolsky's work, is rooted in the wild feminine, or humanity's deep and embodied connection to the natural world, which she explores through writing, media art, motherhood, witchcraft, yoga teaching, and energy healing. And you can find out more about her by checking out her website, and that's DanielleDolsky.com, DanielleDulsky.com. And the book we're featuring today is The Holy Wild, A Heathen Bible for the Untamed Woman. Welcome back, Danielle.
Thank you, Monique. Very happy to be here.
Oh, I am so glad to have you back. You know, I really enjoyed listening, after I interviewed you, listening to the podcast. The first time you came on when you were talking about your book, Woman Most Wild, last year in 2017. And this book seems to be like an extension to it. And folks, by the way, if you want to listen to that podcast, you can just go to Danielle's site, okay, and it'll be listed there. So, you know, go take a listen, because this is going to follow through basically on that book, because she has grown. The girl has grown. Danielle, in this book, you know, I find the title really interesting, you know, The Holy Wild, A Heathen Bible for the Untamed Woman. So I want to start there with a couple of things, okay? First of all, you talk about the heathen, a heathen Bible.
Yes.
So what do you mean by heathen? Because a lot of people associate heathen with something not so nice.
I know. Right. So heathen, just like witch or pagan, can, you know, cause people to have that kind of visceral reaction that think it's evil or something. But really, heathen and pagan actually kind of have the same etymology, where the word just means living on uncultivated land. So it's they were the dwellers on the heath, or the rural people who had not been Christianized yet, primarily in the Celtic lands, the heathens. And also the Nordic lands. So even though heathen has kind of this negative connotation, and it's a word that I've always loved, because my mother used to call me a heathen whenever I did anything that that she thought was wrong or sinful, she would call me her little heathen. It's not necessarily a negative word. It really just means living on spiritually uncultivated land. So just like you were talking about examining our belief systems and trying to make sure they're truly ours, that's what the heathen does, kind of stripping down all of our spirituality and making sure that we authentically believe all that we say or claim that we believe.
Mm-hmm. Or at least walk your talk in what you believe. We were just talking about that a few minutes ago before we started the show. It's important to truly walk that talk. Have your belief, but then walk it. No matter what your belief is, you can always change your mind. Now, the other word in the title that really caught my attention was Bible, because I am so... Well, first of all, let me put the disclaimer out there that if you are a religious person, I honor you and I honor what religion that you do practice, because everybody has their path to get to where they're going. However, I completely separate spirituality from religion. And when I saw the word Bible, it all of a sudden, like, religion just came in, and I'm like, but that's not who she is. So why are you calling it a heathen Bible?
Right. Well, so Bible too is one of those words that it just means book. So like, even though it does have all of those connotations, it's like this one religion has claimed this word that just means book as its own. So while I agree with you and certainly honor everyone's religious path, I too will absolutely separate spirituality from religiosity. And that's actually this huge point of controversy right now in even witchcraft, where, you know, it seems like we're kind of evenly split between those that claim witchcraft is a religion and those that claim that it's not, that it's more of an art. And then there's very few of us that are like me that'll just say, you know, it's whatever it means for the practitioner. So if you think it's a religion, then fine. And if you think it's an art like I do, then fine. but yeah, so Bible, just book. But I use that word on purpose, because I could have just said book, but I use Bible on purpose to kind of claim that you can have your own holy book that is spiritual without being religious, that it can have that same weight to it like a Bible would, even though it's a book that's primarily about your own story.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the one thing that I got out of reading this book was that it's really important to create whatever spiritual path you want to create and then just walk your talk, like we said. So how does one get to the point where they can feel comfortable with being who they are and creating their own spiritual path?
That's a heavy question. I guess there's a difference between, you know, feeling comfortable, at least in my experience, there's a difference between feeling comfortable with your own spiritual path and then feeling comfortable being seen, having your own spiritual path. So, you know, for me, feeling comfortable being a witch, that happened much, much sooner than that, the comfort level with other people knowing that I was a witch. But what I always tell people is to start from their own lived experience. So if they're trying to create a spiritual practice, whether it's born of witchcraft or any other tradition, that the greatest thing they can do is go back through their childhood and then later moments of feeling very whole and at one with the world. So those moments when you feel very much at peace with yourself, and kind of take an inventory and look for the patterns within those moments, those fleeting moments of just feeling very much in the flow with the universe, whether you're like watching the sunrise or sitting by a campfire or something, these moments that are very much ephemeral and they kind of come and go, and then look for the patterns. And probably you have these very glaring patterns that maybe you've never thought about before, where maybe you're always alone, maybe you're always with other people, maybe you have a lot of the earth element in there, like you're frequently gardening or, you know, looking at trees or something like that. And start there, because that's your authentic spiritual truth. Those moments when you were like, oh, this is totally it. And then that way you can't really betray yourself because you're starting with the moments when you felt more you than you've ever been before. So you can't really misstep or do it wrong, which I think is a big source of fear for a lot of people that are embarking on a new spiritual journey.
Yeah, you know, I agree because so many people feel that you have to follow a particular template, even with spirituality, in order to get it right. And then there's some, what I'm going to call the spiritual elitist out there, where it has to be their way or the highway. And,
and
if you were looking at me, I would show you what I would tell them. But it's truly, important to be ourselves. Now, you talk about your book and the work you do as a witchcraft movement. What is a witchcraft movement?
I don't know that it's a movement. Did I say it was a movement?
Some places you did.
Maybe. So you know, witchcraft is like I said, it's different for each practitioner. So any witch would define the word witch differently. For me, a witch is anyone that meets both of two conditions. So first, they practice witchcraft, whatever their witchcraft is, and then the second one is that they've claimed the name witch for themselves. So it isn't really a name that can be given to you by any external authority as much as it's claimed as your own. And so, you know, this resurgence, I don't know if you can even call it a resurgence, but there's witchcraft is the fastest growing spiritual tradition in the United States anyway. And there's been this recent article, I forget what magazine it was in, but like one of the big publications that said witchcraft is the greatest spiritual movement among millennials, that millennials are embracing witchcraft at like this exponential rate.
Interesting.
And I think that's because we are in this time right now of great urgency where if there's anything that's going to save us, it's environmental consciousness and this kind of high fire activism where we really do need to know that it's kind of do or die time. And so these religions that are earth-based, that honor the elements like witchcraft does, they do have this kinship with nature that perhaps other spiritual traditions might not have, or at least not as much of a foundational force as witchcraft does, where the earth is kind of everything. So, if we're in this place right now where we need to kind of rally against policies that are going to damage the planet irrevocably, that the witches are kind of rising to stop it in whatever way they can with their magic, with their art, with their activism. So I do think that this idea of it being a movement and the exponential growth that witchcraft is experiencing right now, it's kind of arising out of a social need, and religions have always historically risen out of social need. And not just a social need, but this is like a planetary human need. So we do need the witches right now. Absolutely.
Well, there was a movement a while ago, and I don't know if it's still going on, among some of the witches to basically try to banish Trump or at least bind him. He seems to be such an oppressive personality, and he wants complete dominion over everything. It almost reminds me of like the devil, his energy. Are the witches that you know about still actively trying to like, not hurt him in any way, but just to kind of like make him normal. And although I don't think
all the magic in the world.
that kind of just slipped out and was like, whoops, because that's not working. But what can someone who is practicing whatever brand or flavor of witchcraft that they do, or someone who's thinking about, witchcraft, what can they do to send softened energy to Washington, D.C., and the person that lives in the White House? It just seems like we're going down the tube so quickly, and each day you turn on the news, it seems to be worse and worse and worse.
I know. I hear you, and I was reading just a friend's Facebook comment this morning that said she doesn't understand how you can be a witch and still support the current administration, because there's plenty of witches that are very conservative with their politics, or probably more frequently that have embraced this kind of what I call spiritual apathy, where, you know, there's no point in trying to do anything because we are, you know, that their magic can't affect change in that realm because that realm is so broken. However, what I would say, because yes, then there are all of these other witches and probably a dominant population of witches that are trying to bind, which is really a form of magical boundary setting, and then even hex, which, and hexing is different from binding. Hexing is, you know, like trying to actually strike at a person or a system. So in my practice, just personally, I don't usually hex people, but hexing a system always feels right to me. if it's the correct system, it feels right. So yes, you absolutely can do that, and you know, witchcraft is our magic is the conversation we have with the world about the kind of world we want the children of the future to live in. So when we would hex, say, patriarchy or hex the current Trump administration, we are saying, you know, that this isn't good enough, that we want to live in, we want the children of the future generations to live in a world where, you know, the environment is protected and people are protected and all of these other terrible things that the president is doing, you know, where there aren't children locked in cages at the border. You know, we want to live in that kind of world. And you can absolutely do that with magic. And it is a claiming of your right to do that. So kind of having that, what I call like that soft belly kind of syndrome, where you don't feel like you have the agency to affect change in your world, witches really have to get past that, and they do. And it's a big part of the witch's spiritual journey to get to that place where you truly believe, I have the right to do this. I can direct the energy in a way that will affect change because I know, I believe that this is the right thing to do. So yeah. So, you know, I would say that it's not like the first step on the witch's journey usually, but you absolutely get to a point where you're like, I have the right to do this, and this is wrong. And
I've had enough. So it's not even trying to change someone, like, you know, you want to force your will on them. It's like looking at a system and saying, this is not advantageous for the whole. So you're helping the whole as opposed to just helping yourself, right?
Yes, right, exactly. And like, I don't think all the magic in the world could make Trump normal. I think that there is this real merit in witches coming together and showing, like, you know, we can cast spells together. You know, we do have this power. And that's another big controversy in the pagan community right now, is like, how much do you show? You know, how much do you post on social media about your magic practice, and then how much do you keep quiet? But then there's something to, like, you know, that Time Magazine focused on the Kavanaugh hex that was going on at one of the witchcraft shops up in New York, and it's like, wow, you know, people are paying attention at least. Whether you think it's good or bad, people are paying attention that the witches can really rally. So
well, if they're paying attention, guess what, folks, it might happen. I just want to quote this from page 102 in your book, The Holy Wild. It says, a priestess must consider how her magic is a conversation with the global community and with the universal order of all things. So, folks, it's not like somebody's, you know, pointing a finger at you and saying you're going to get chickenpox next week and all of a sudden it happens. It's truly about, you know, working with the earth, working with the universe, and yourself being walking your own talk, so to speak, and getting out there to the world. We're speaking with Danielle Dulski. We're talking about her latest book, which is The Holy Wild, A Heathen Bible for the Untamed Woman. And if you can't figure it out by now, Danielle is definitely Untamed, and I absolutely love it. You can check her out at her website, and that is DanielleDulski.com. That's DanielleDulski.com. The book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, and I think even IndieBound. So go to her website. You'll find her, to go to Amazon. If you are at all interested in the Divine Feminine, this is a book for you. Now, Danielle, in your book, you talk a lot about the triple goddess archetype. Why?
So for me, the triple goddess archetype, the maiden, mother, crone, is kind of a lens through which I see maybe the whole world, but certainly the the wild feminine. And so you know, our maidenhood, the maiden is our lower energy centers. It's our connection to the earth. It's our sensuality. It's the earth and water element. It's our creativity. It's our art. It's our joy. It's our agony. It's all of those kind of lower, more individualized, soul-based elements of the human experience. And then our inner mothers are very generative. They're doers. So the mother third of the triple goddess is probably the most socially validated aspect of the wild feminine, because she's a doer. She's constantly busy and you know, moving with her many hands. Mm-hmm. And so she's the middle energy center. So she's very much a storyteller. She exists in relationship with others. She's also an activist sometimes. So she has a lot of fire and air elements in her. And then finally, the crone archetype is kind of our inner elder. So she's a little bit more solitary than the mother. She's very intuitive. She's very much in touch with the ether element, and also the spiral dance of time. So the way the wheel of the year moves and all dies to begin again. That's our inner crone. So the reason we're looking at the three of those kind of in conjunction with one another is because you can't really have one without the other two, at least not in a healthy way. So our spirituality cycles between these three archetypes all of the time, and each one of these three would have a different portion of the lunar cycle, but also the solar cycle that it would be have a little bit more of a deeper kinship with. Mm-hmm. So the triple goddess is, for me, everything, because it kind of informs your entire spiritual practice. And I usually say too, it doesn't matter to me whether you call these things that I'm talking about feminine or triple goddess or maiden, mother, crone. You can call them whatever you want by whatever labels you prefer, but what we're really talking about are those socially suppressed aspects of our culture, and also our selfhood. So, you know, our right to feel, our right to dance, our right to let our emotions cycle as they will, all of those things that might not be particularly good for capitalism, but are very much integral to our spiritual practice.
Oh, okay. Now, we talked about the triple goddess. Is there a triple god? What about the male energy?
Yes, there is. The masculine would be hunter, father, sage. And so in my practice, I usually view the father as kind of the archetype that rules our society, and certainly would have been the generator of capitalism. So the father archetype is very individualistic versus the mother, who thinks very holistically. And in terms of community, the father is very much individualized, so kind of considerate of himself and then his family, his immediate inner circle. And then the hunter would be the masculine counterpart to the maiden. And the hunter and maiden are very similar. The hunter is very instinctual and kind of reactive, but both of them are very sensual and connected to nature. And then the sage archetype would be the counterpart to the crone. And the sage is kind of the ruler of many of our dominant spiritual systems. So the sage, unlike the crone, will fragment and separate in order to examine more deeply. So the sage is kind of like a scientist. So if we think of the way we have come to know the human body in Western medicine, we've kind of separated this system from this system in order to get a little bit more in depth with each one. That's kind of the way the sage thinks. We separate in order to examine, and the crone really wants to look at things as more of a web where everything is inextricably bound to one another.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there you guys got, you have it. You have the triple goddess and the triple god, and you know, you can figure out where you are at any given moment between those three energies on either side. In your book, Danielle, you have broken the book down into five like separate books within a book, and then you've further broken each book down into three different segments. So talk to us about the five books within The Holy Wild, and then the breaking down yet again of the sub-book, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So the books are broken into the five elements. So there's the Book of Earth, Book of Water, Book of Fire, Book of Air, and then the Book of Ether. And each of those five books is broken into three chapters. So there's the verses chapters, and then the rituals chapters, and then finally the magic chapters. So for each element, the verses chapters offer stories, sometimes these revision tales of sinful women from the Bible and from other myths and goddess archetypes that have this kind of dark side or wild side, and also poetry, and probably primarily the verses chapters offer the reader opportunities to look at these stories that I offer and forge connections between those stories and their own story, the reader's story. So there's different prompts that I offer in order for the writer to kind of fill in these blanks and consider how that particular element and the goddess archetypes that have an affinity for that element play a part in their own story and their own lived experience. And then the rituals chapters are spell work and ceremonies for developing a deeper connection with the element. And then finally, the magic chapters are sometimes meditations, sometimes incantations and further offerings of poetry that relate to that particular element. So and it's funny because there's so much in the book that a lot of people say, you know, they're mostly drawn to the verses chapters or they're mostly drawn to the rituals chapters, and that all of that is fine. So if there's a part of the book that you're more drawn to and you want to kind of leave the rest out, that's the way it's designed. It's designed to have like so much in it that, you know, that you don't have to fall in love with every single part of it, but I hope that you do.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's like anything in life, you should approach it with an open mind and then take from it what resonates with you, and the rest save for later, because you can definitely experience something that doesn't resonate with you today, and then 3 years from now, you're ready for that information, you know. I've got like a zillion books on my bookshelf, and not all of them have I read, because I picked them up and it's like, oh, okay, well, no, thank you, not yet. And, you know, there comes a time when it's like, oh, okay, it's great. Now I can embrace this. I can fully hold on to it, if you will. So, you talk about the importance of returning to our natural spiritual state. Why now? I mean, some people feel that the earth is ascending, or even that the universe is ascending, and we're going to go from the third dimension, skip the fourth, and go to the fifth dimension. So why is it important now, especially in light of what's going on politically all over the world? It's just not here in the United States. It seems to be a worldwide issue. So why now?
Yeah, that's a good question that I don't really have an answer to. I think in my own practice, it hasn't really helped me just personally, you know, this idea of like, where is the earth headed, and, you know, that we're in this epic age of something. I think that defining whatever that thing is that's going on right now hasn't served me personally. Because in some way, just I feel it kind of alleviating a sense of responsibility almost, you know, if I'm part of this like huge collective awakening or something, then great, I can like sit back and take it easy. I'd wait for the enlightenment to come or something. And that doesn't feel right to me. So I don't really know, you know, where it is that we're headed. And I think that, you know, there are those of us that have been born right now at this time to be like the death doulas, to be the death priestesses and kind of midwife, the end of whatever it is that's dying. And maybe it's not that important for us to really know what that next thing is that's coming, because we're just kind of in charge of this, you know, the death rattle of patriarchy or whatever it is that's dying. Might even be bigger than patriarchy. So I haven't named that next big thing yet, but I think, you know, just knowing that there's something heavy happening right now and that we're part of this transformation might be enough.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you know, folks, again, you know, go get the book. It's a wonderful read. Actually, a woman by the name of Susan Weed, who I have all of her books, she did, you know, well, she really didn't do it forethought, but she did a wonderful review of the book. And if you resonate with Susan Weed at all, you will definitely resonate with the information in this book. Now, Danielle, when we go to your website and we look at the wonderful writings you have done, one in particular caught my attention. Let me see if I can find it real quick. It was Gathering the Lightning Women, Initiation by Storm, and the Oldest of Gods. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I love that one. I wrote that. I'm doing this only about a quarter of the way through this very long Indigenous Irish training. So I did that after I had moved through this long pathworking experience as part of that training, I just had, at the risk of sounding like, you know, like I've gone off my rocker or something, I had this really, really a powerful experience where it was like surrounded by these beings that were like made of lightning, and we were around this tree, and there was a very obvious like male or masculine deity that I don't know who it was or if I need to know who it was. But there was this feeling, more than the story of the dream, of the pathworking, there was this feeling of like of homecoming, of like return to something that I have no name for yet. But it did feel like an initiation. So there, and there was also this like kind of sense of urgency, like, you know, call up your people and and gather them and let them see these lightning beings or whatever. So I wrote that after coming out of that experience. And I write a lot of things like that, where they're just kind of reflections on this bizarre thing that I did. And they're not really prophecy or channeled writings. They're more just a reflection of my own spiritual journey.
Then you're truly walking your talk. I mean, you're going through it, but you're paying attention and you're being more aware. So I think that's what, you know, most of us are put here to do. if not all.
Yeah,
but at
I
least.
Think so too.
Okay, so since you're doing all of these wild things, exactly what is wild spirituality? Why does it have to be wild?
So for me, yeah, why does it have to be wild? Well, I think that when we recognize that something is wild, we are acknowledging that it's not only born of nature, but it has the meaning we didn't intellectualize it into being. It existed mm-hmm. before all of our great intellect and strategy and all of that. But also that it is cyclical. So our spirituality is wild because, like you said about, you know, maybe a book's not for you today, but it will be tomorrow. Same thing with any spiritual practice. And that's always what I tell the newer witches or the younger witches that are coming to the craft, is that you absolutely will wake up maybe for 3 months in a row or longer mm-hmm. and not mm-hmm. feel like you want to do this anymore. You know, just feel like, well, this isn't for me right now. And that's totally okay. And it doesn't mean that it's never for you or that it was wrong before. It just means that our spirituality ebbs and flows just like the ocean does, just like the tides do, or mm-hmm. waxes and wanes like the moon does. So our spirituality is wild, just like every part of us is wild. And it just means that it is very much allowed to change, that there's no part of our ceremony or spellcraft or magic that would be immutable and static and always the same, and that it's just like nature. So when we try to tame it and control it and pack it into the neat little box that we bought for it, that it will kind of buck and start to not serve us anymore until we let it breathe.
Okay. So of all of the thousands of people listening to this podcast today, say 10% of them, just 10% want to engage more in spirituality and witchcraft. What should they do? What are the first steps if you truly have thought it through and you want to become, or at least label yourself, a witch?
Yeah, so what I usually say is to try to read as much as possible, and mm-hmm. I know that that's overwhelming because there's so many books on witchcraft now, but even when you do what you just said, you know, buy the book and think, like, that's not for me yet, and put it on the shelf, or there's a wealth of information online now, certainly, but to absorb as much as possible before going out and looking for a mentor or somebody that can direct you, because it really serves to have a foundational knowledge mm-hmm. about what you like and what you don't, what's for you and what's not, before you go out and seek a teacher. And I'm not saying don't seek a mentor or teacher. Certainly, there's a lot of merit in doing that, but it really helps to know what's yours before falling into what perhaps might not be for you just because it's presented in kind of a polished way or whatever. So I would say read as much as possible. There's also this amazing app. It's called the Divine Feminine app that I'm not affiliated with in any way, but I just think mm-hmm. it's the greatest thing, where you put your zip code into this app. And mm-hmm. the app will show you all of these, like, moon circles, women's circles, coven meetings, of these groups that are in your area. Yeah, so, you know, if there's a circle that's calling you, you know, maybe go and see if it's for you. But even then, knowing that, like, if you go and it doesn't feel like going home, then it's probably mm-hmm. not yours, right?
Excellent that you said it that way, because a long time ago I wanted, you know, I've been doing this work forever, but, you know, teaching classes I didn't know how to do, so I thought I'd take a few classes with different instructors to see how mm-hmm. they teach, not so much for the knowledge, but to see how they teach. And my mm-hmm. goodness, I met one woman, she called herself creating a coven, but she wasn't honest about it, and mm-hmm. she hated men. She was extremely controlling with what you could and could not even watch on TV. Well, her thing was she didn't watch TV, but she taught. Uh-huh. She talked a lot about what she watched on TV. But the people that she had in her group were fearful of her. And I was like, well, okay, well, this isn't, you know, a good way to be. So if you walk yourselves into a situation, folks, and all of a sudden you become afraid, don't be afraid to get up and walk out. It's okay.
Right.
You know, the group may or may not try to do something to you, but, you know, just shove it away, push it off. They can't do anything unless you allow that energy to come in.
Right, so, yeah, it's, and you can't learn when you're in a place of fear, right? So no, they're almost like antithetical. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing the information on the app. I'll put that on the show notes page, definitely. Now, is there anything else someone should do besides, you know, reading and taking a class? I mean, do you have to be part of a group, or can you be solitary?
Yeah, absolutely. You can be solitary. And that's another part of our spirituality that will cycle. I think that every witch, whether they've been doing it for 50 years or they just started yesterday, you go through these cycles of feeling very called to community and wanting to circle with others and then wanting to be alone in your living room. And that those cycles can be years. They can last years. So absolutely, you do not need a community of people, and that you shouldn't feel that you're not really doing it, or that you're not a real witch, or all of those things that we might tell ourselves, or that the internet trolls might tell us. If you never do it outside of your house, that's okay. If you never tell anyone that you're a witch besides yourself, that's okay, and it doesn't make you any less magical or knowledgeable or wise than you would be if you were screaming it from the rooftops.
Okay, well, you know, speaking of rooftops and everything, you have an apprentice coming up. I guess it begins in 2019, but the first portal opening is 12/21. So talk to us about that. What are people going to learn?
Yeah, so this is my first year offering this apprenticeship. So it is full because I only had 5 people in it. I wanted to have 5 spots and keep it very small, just until spring, and then I might open up more spots when we get to the warmer months. But it's basically me sharing everything that I know as humbly as possible, and not in a way where I'm in a position of master or anything like that, but just, you know, here's what I know kind of spilled out onto going to be primarily through online sessions and video and guided meditations and things like that. So it's just, I started feeling called to share a little bit more about what I do, my personal witchcraft, rather than you know, through books and through mm-hmm. other trainings that I do. So it's as real as I've gotten, I guess, as an offering from teacher to student. So this is my year of kind of figuring out how that's going to work going forward, because it is something I would like to expand possibly in 2020.
Oh, okay. Now, you also have some online offerings on your website that you're extending out to people. Tell us about that.
So I have a course called Embodied Witchcraft, which is offered, there is a link on my website, but it's offered through the House of Twigs School of Ritual. And that's a very short mini course. It can be done in, I believe, just 5 weeks. And it's a way, it's good for beginners because it's a way of feeling into, literally feeling into witchcraft, you know, how you feel a spell in the body, how you can feel energy kind of buzzing in your hands, things like that, and how your own magic would wax and wane according to the wheel of the year, depending on who you are and what seasons you're kind of more abuzz with electricity. So it's different for everyone. So that's a totally online course that's accessible. And affordable too. I think it's like $108. So that's a good course to begin with.
Okay, and then you also teach yoga.
I do.
You flexible one. How does being so the flexibility of yoga help with the flexibility of the mind in working with witchcraft?
Yeah. Well, you just said it. That's absolutely it. You know, we move in order to make space in the body. So we move and we stretch our bodies in order to clear, the fuzzy sort of fascia that might gather around the joints, and to have like more liberation in our movement, and that very much translates to our magic. We know how there's this parallel, or at least yoga teachers tend to know how there's a parallel between a chronically inflexible body and a chronically inflexible mind. There is this real parallel between movement and breathing and a physical expression of liberation, and then that same open-mindedness that is required for for magic and spellcraft. And because in both ways, I'm talking about it like it's some kind of elite thing, and it isn't. You do it in this very humble way where, if you're in a yoga pose and you fall over, that's kind of the greatest thing that you can do. because you're like, oh, I don't know everything. I am not a master. And we need those moments in our magical practice also, in our witchcraft and our spiritual practice also. So, yes, they very much do parallel each other.
Okay, so I hear the question being asked. So in order to be a witch, do I have to have a certain talent? Like, do I have to be psychic? Do I have to be a healer? Or can someone just decide this is what they want to do and embark on their path?
Yeah. Witchcraft to me is first and foremost an art. So whatever medium you work in is perfect. So if you're psychic, great. If you are just very skilled at growing things in the garden, that's awesome. If you are able to raise energy through dancing, that's perfect. So we all have a different medium, and certainly combinations of media, but no one person's witchcraft will look the same as anybody else's, and there is no requirement for having any special skill or being able to see into the ethers before you begin practicing. Now, sometimes that does come with the practice, but it's certainly not a requirement to begin.
Have you ever done something and you completely shocked yourself, number one, that it happened, and you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yes, I have. It's funny because like witches are always looking for proof, right? So we won't say stick with not that we're without discipline, but we won't stick with something where we're not getting that proof like this is working. Mm-hmm. And I think that with most witches' spiritual journeys, we've all had those spells that just fizzled despite our best efforts, and then we've had those that for whatever reason seemed very easy and simple, and yet they clicked and were absolutely everything. And so I've had those moments where it's like, wow, that didn't really seem that powerful at the time, and yet here I am reaping the benefits. So yeah, I absolutely have had those moments of shock, like, wow, witchcraft is real. No wonder.
Yes, it is. Yes, and it does work, folks. It does work. And we're not talking of, the old wives' tale of, oh, my goodness, they're going to point a finger at you and something negative is going to happen. That's not necessarily true. I mean, people who would wish ill towards others, what you put out comes back to you three times over. So just keep it clean. Put out there what you want for yourself and the betterment for the world, and it's okay. We've been speaking with Danielle Dolsky, and her book is The Holy Wild, A Heathen Bible for the Untamed Woman. If you are a woman who is not tamed, definitely go out and get it, because it is going to rock your world. If you're a guy looking and thinking, not even looking, but thinking that you can tame your woman, go get this book, because it'll help you understand the female species and, what we're truly all about. So, Danielle, our time is almost up. What words of wisdom would you like to impart, or what do you want people to get most out of this wonderful book that you've written?
What I hope they get out of it is an understanding that their own personal story is important, and that when they look at their own story as kind of like an epic myth or an epic novel, that there's this realization that they are kind of healing their own ancestral lines one breath at a time, that they are having a sacred experience, or like you said, a spirit having a human experience, and that all of that is valuable and sacred, and that they are no less holy than than deity or saints, that they mm-hmm. are an embodiment of the sacred.
Okay. Well, folks, we've been speaking with Danielle Dolsky. Again, the name of the book is The Holy Wild, A Heathen Bible for the Untamed Woman. You can check her out at her website, and that's danielledolsky.com, danielledulsky.com. If you are at all interested in witchcraft, or you just want to find out more about what it is, get this book, because it's a different take. She's not putting you into any ceremonial box that you have to stay within. It's kind of free. It's kind of wild, and I think you can pick that up from Danielle's energy, and it's definitely something that will not only entertain you, but it will give you knowledge and allow you to become more aware. I got a lot out of it, so I think that you folks will too. So Danielle, thanks for being with me today. The audience, I thank you. The divine in me honors the divine in you. When you're ready to live a more balanced life, you can give me a call for a consultation. Consultations 30 minutes or longer are offered at a 10% discount if you mention the podcast. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself. Make that call. 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of love. Abundant blessings, light and love to all. Namaste.